Good afternoon, Wrangle. You're listening to Talk on the Rock, your local live call-in show. The time is 1:01. We have our guest, Steve Prasanka, in the studio today. He's one of your assembly members. So he's going to talk a little bit today about what's happening in the city. Please call in any time during this program to ask a question or just say hi. That number is 874-2345. So, Steve, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks a lot for having me, June.
Absolutely. I just want to say before we kick it off that I love having people from the city come in. I love having the city staff, and I think you're the first assembly member we've had on the show, so thank you.
The first sacrificial assembly member.
Yes, thank you for being here.
So you have to go easier, or else nobody will come.
Okay, I'll go... not easy.
There you go.
Not today.
Fire away.
Okay, so we're just going to talk about some stuff that's going on with the city. One of the big things for sure is our healthcare situation. We know that Surge is going to be taking over the operations and the liability of our hospital in November, and that we should be getting a new hospital in 3 to 4 years, something.
Well, I think you've got the general stuff right. First of all, there's no final decision been made yet. They're still in the throes of the negotiations of that. So where it was left was the assembly voted and basically empowered Lisa von Bargen, our city manager, to move forward in that process. And so there is a thousand little details that have to get worked out. Now, I have no doubt that we'll work them out, mm-hmm. and that I think all sides, both sides, are negotiating in really good faith. But we have no decisions have been made yet. So that's the first thing.
Yeah.
Lisa went down to Seattle, and Dan Neumeister, sort of their point man, and I think he's still the COO, but I think he had a recent title change. They met and they brought the lawyers with them, and the city has brought on a team of lawyers out of Anchorage to assist us with this. So they all got together in the same room for several days and worked through the majority of the details. But now we have things like creating schedules that will show us what the value of certain things are at the hospital and what they anticipate will be taken over and not taken over, and working out these fine details. So that's we're moving forward. It's looking really good, but no decision has ultimately been made to sign that contract with Search to take it over yet. So
yeah,
I'm positive about that. Now, the new hospital or the replacement hospital, there's been some fantastic inroads, and Search really has done a great job of, first of all, a collaboration with the community, mm-hmm. Bringing in all the stakeholders and having a series of meetings over, I think it was 2 or 3 sessions with the architects at Wold Architecture. And they were able to sort of identify areas of strength and areas that we can improve in terms of the new building and what that can look like. Mm-hmm. Now Wold is taking it back, and they are drawing up. They sort of made a block drawing of what it could look like and how it would blend into the current clinic, the current AICS Search clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, now they got to work out all the little fine details and where what will wind up where and also leave room for expansion. So
yeah.
I saw those plans. I think they were put out to the community. They look great. And I'm really excited about the ability for us to expand, especially things like long-term care.
Uh-huh.
So it's all looking really good.
Exactly. Yeah, it's looking good. It seems like everybody on the assembly is on board. And then, you know, even people in the community, especially people that work at the hospital, are on board. And this seems like a lifeboat for the city. Can you maybe just describe a little bit about what's going on with our hospital that we need this lifeboat so bad?
Well, it's not, first of all, it's nothing that the hospital did. I want to be really clear about that.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were in those meetings, we kept talking about this hospital like it was this some sort of magical entity that just, I don't know, this building treated patients. A hospital is about its staff, and we have incredible staff.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife has always said that is the strongest asset up there is the incredible staff that we have. And so when we talk about this rundown hospital that's got pipes that are bad and electrical that's bad and this and this and this, I feel badly for the staff. We're not talking about those staff. Those staff are exceptional. And I'm here to tell you, Search would never have moved forward with a merger if we didn't already have this pool of incredible people. Because you can imagine trying to establish a new hospital in a community and attract all these professionals like Marengo already has. So first of all, the building, it's old, it's outlived its useful life. And we knew that 21 years ago when Lynn and I first came to the community. We knew that there was talks then about what they were going to do about the building. So it is completely depreciated out, and that's an important factor for how the funding is recouped. So we were able to, the former director, Brian Gilbert, to his credit, got us our critical access hospital status, which allowed us to bill in a, or to write off our costs in a unique way that's for small community hospitals. So that actually extended a lifeline to where we are today. And when Mr. Gilbert left that position, I know he left it with about a $5 million reserve, which was pretty incredible, and in pretty healthy shape. As we've moved along, that reserve has dwindled, the hospital has aged, and we know we need a new hospital if we want to continue to have a hospital here. When we looked at that, for the cheap option, after you took into account the financing of that, would be $90 million, which is a heck of a liability.
After financing that,
you bet.
With all the debt.
I think it was 48 or something just alone. So what that did is it really made me as an assembly member, and I know other assembly members, I won't speak for everybody, but sort of sit up and take notice. And there was a diverging line of where the appreciation, like, so the depreciation of the asset was actually going to make the payments on that hospital for a period of time. And I can't remember, you might remember how many years, June, like 12 or 14 or 20 years on a 40-year mortgage.
On a 40-year, sounds right.
And then about 20 years into it, there is no more, your depreciation starts to run out. And so now you're having to generate more funds. Well, we have limited access to resources for patients, basically, to increase our net revenue here. So we were taking a risk with our future by continuing on. So long story short, this is not the hospital's fault. This is basically a little bit of a tornado that has been gearing up for a while, and all these factors have conspired to create this situation. Not the staff's fault, not Robert Rang's fault. It's just what we've had coming. And I sort of call it the deferred demise of that building and that asset.
Yes.
You know, we talk about deferred maintenance, that was deferred demise. We managed to stave it off, but we just can't any longer.
No.
And enter Search, and that's where... You know, when they took over AICS, I know my family was watching that very carefully because my wife was a part of that merger. Mm-hmm. And or that it wasn't really a merger, it was a takeover. And they've been very good and lived to all of the commitments that they made to staff, and then have actually done a bit better in a lot of instances. So we've been pleased how they've treated the staff and the community.
Exactly. Yeah. Mark Walker said that they lived by their word. So that's a good promise for what could happen with the hospital.
Well, and I'll put in a plug right now. We at the fire department, we recognize, you know, Dorian Spray and Chief Buness recognized that we had an issue with CPR and doing CPR in confined spaces. And we have a new facility in town that has confined hallways. We couldn't do CPR on a resident wheeling them out. And so we approached Search and the Walker Foundation for, I think it was close to $8,000 grant to buy a automated CPR machine, the first one we've ever had in the community. And they stood by us and helped us out. And I just can't say enough of what how community-minded they are.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so, the city's on board with this acquisition. Are we out of the hole because of this? Like, what does the hospital need to be doing before this becomes a real thing? And especially if it seems like it's very likely, but there is 1%, 2% chance it's not.
Well, First of all, I don't think we can put a percentage on it not being
true.
But I do think that we can look at this this way. The hospital just put forward a budget that has an $800,000 deficit. That $800,000 equates to about $65,000 a month or something thereabouts, and I apologize for my bad math. But we're hemorrhaging money out of the hospital. And again, it's nobody's fault. It's a fault of no depreciation left in the building and constant battle with Medicaid and Medicare and all these other issues and people paying and so on. So I am constantly railing at meetings about the hospital must take every measure possible to prevent the loss of funds that we don't need to. So, for example, travel. I have asked the city manager to ensure that the hospital limits its travel, that we know that there will be a merger fairly soon. So why would we be sending people out for, say, training that isn't absolutely necessary at this point? We're going to have a new entity who's going to be able to bill a lot more than we currently bill, by the way, that we'll be taking on, and let them decide what they want to do for training for the staff. Let's say signage. Why would we buy new signs? We're going to have somebody taking over. So those are the sort of things. Plus, the hospital owes the city $250,000, and I would like to get that money back. I've been very vocal about that all the way along. That was a short-term loan to help them make payroll in their most desperate of hours.
Yes.
And that money came out of our reserve, and I would like to see that money come back. If Search takes over the hospital, I doubt they're going to pay us that $250,000 from previous operations.
Exactly. Yep, exactly. Search is not going to pay the city for that. Yeah. And that was issued to the hospital about in the fall, maybe October or so. Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah, and if Search is going to come in and take over and do what they need to do with the existing hospital, yeah, why are we going to put more money into it now? Now is, you know, cleaning house or just letting it...
Well, I really think that as we move along, we know that we're moving towards this operational takeover by Search of the hospital. It makes not a lot of sense for us to be making operational decisions that will impact the future when Search takes it over. Mm-hmm. So that, for me, that goes from everything from personnel to training regimes to
equipment, you
know, equipment, all of that. I just don't see it as a something we should be venturing into at this time, at least without us having some discussions with Search, and I want the city manager at least in there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Perfect. Okay. If you're just now tuning in, the time is 1:14. We have Assembly Member Steve Persunka in the studio. We'll go to a short break and we'll come back with more questions about what's happening with the city. Please call us. That number is 874-2345. All right, we are back. Thanks for tuning in. We have a call. Let me pull that up right now. Hi, Carl. Are you on the phone?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've got a question. Now, part of what's hurting the funding of a lot of hospitals across the country is the cutback on Medicaid and Medicare. And I know that CERC gets some of its income from that. But I'm wondering, with the further cuts in Medicaid and Medicare, how CERC is going to be able to afford to build and maintain the hospital.
Did we lose Carl?
Carl.
Hello?
Well, I think I know where he's going with that. I think what he is saying is, with those further cuts of Medicaid and Medicare, how is CERC going to manage that and be able to continue on with the hospital? It's a great question, and I don't want to speak for CERC. What I will say is that they have a massive infrastructure that we just don't have. And they have a lot of lobbying ability that we just don't have. So first of all, CERC receives a different reimbursable rate than we do. And so I can't remember exactly. Dan Neumeister told me at one point, but it was substantially more. And so they're able to actually operate the hospital a lot differently than we were able to, because they just have more revenue coming in. I think Mark Walker said it was like 20 or 30% more in the behavioral health end.
Okay.
So that's substantial.
That's huge. Yes. And this is in part because they're native nonprofit.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So the federal government is going to reimburse them a lot differently than our city hospital.
And you know, Carl, if you're still listening, I think it's a really good question to ask, is that how sustainable is search coming into our community? And I think the simplest answer for me is to tell you that compared to where we're heading and what we're doing right now, search is infinitely more sustainable. I think the last time I looked, they have $125 million reserve. Our hospital has less than 14 days of reserve on our books right now. Our city, even, you know, we're sitting with about an unrestricted reserve, probably just shy of $7 million now in our own city. So this large corporation has some deep pockets to be able to reach in and weather storms that we're just not able to. So I hope that answered Carl's question. If it didn't, he can call back.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for calling, Carl. So let's keep it going. I wanted to go to our next topic and talk about the water situation. It seems like right now the water situation is going pretty good, considering it's the summer, it's peak season. But we know that can change any minute, and definitely long term it can change. So the city decided they wanted to buy into a $9 million new water treatment plant so that we can get our water faster, get more of it. Steve, you just told me that we're still looking for that $9 million through grant funding that...
Well, that's not quite it. But what it is that we know that we, on our loan application for, I believe, about $3 million, we didn't receive authorization on that $3 million. And Lisa and her team are looking at reapplying and other options.
Yes.
So we're going to have to do some more work on it. It's really unfortunate that we wound up where we're at right now, but they're going to work on it. And I want to just say, too, that the new plant, not only is it going to be more efficient, the efficiency is going to be found in how they clean things, and they don't have to use as much water, because right now we use treated water, or there's the, you know, the water that's coming through to clean stuff out. Mm-hmm. So we lose a whole bunch of water every time we flush these holding tanks with the sand in it. And I think there's great efficiency to be found in that. But this is a hydra, pardon the pun, that's got many heads, and the heads start right up at our reservoir.
Yes.
Both reservoirs need work. At our treatment plant, at our storage facility, we need to increase the storage. Now, we're going to deal with the treatment plant and the storage. And then in our distribution system, we have issues with ductile iron that seems to be rotting out at a fairly fast rate. That has me extremely concerned. And then goes right to our end users. And we know that our end users, some are utilizing a lot of water, probably without even knowing it. And we know that in the wintertime, when there's no processing plants operating, we can have as much water flowing through our system as in the summertime when we have two plants going full bore.
Oh, yeah.
So what that says to us is in cold temperatures, we see an increase of water. People are running their faucets to prevent freeze up.
Yes, they are.
And that costs the city an immense amount of money. Plus, right now, the way it's structured is we don't have a mechanism to know on a real-time basis, I guess, when we have leaks. And we discovered some leaks when we did this survey that have been leaking for God only knows how long. Mm-hmm. And when I ran through some numbers the other night at the assembly, that, you know, year over year, we had a dramatic drop after we ran around and plugged some of these leaks. And we're talking thousands of gallons a day going away into the ground.
Yes.
So, The assembly has voted, and we're moving forward with the new plant and some storage. But we have many other issues up there. And I think, I still believe, and I know the assembly agrees with me, this is our number one priority for this community. Above all else, water is our number one priority. We have no growth, we have no future, and we have no industry without water. So we have to deal with this.
Absolutely. And so, I mean, if what we have right now in the works is a new plant that is going to get here in about 3 years, I mean, that's still 3 years of time that we need to address this issue. What does that look like?
Well, number one, I think we have to keep finding these leaks and dealing with that, because that's sort of an immediate, that's low-hanging fruit. So if we can keep patching stuff up to keep the water from leaking into the ground, I think that's number one. Wayne and his crew, Andrew and Wayne, have we've got some seasonal workers with them, and they're doing a great job of keeping the tanks clean. Now, I just received notice the other day from Lisa that we had an issue with a component on one of the ozone components. And we had one on the shelf, but it wasn't programmed correctly. And then there was a mess up with getting it here. So I think we saw a little bit of increase in turbidity in our water here recently, but the guys have jumped on it. We've got a new one here and they're getting it in. But bottom line is conservation. And if you can avoid, I know I was at somebody's house the other day and they're running their hose, flushing out their cooler full bore, just had it sitting out in their yard, nobody even there. I'm like, yeah, it all adds up. It really does. So if we can stay and continue to conserve, I think those measures really help. And I know Wayne has said that he's seen it, that the community just being more cautious with water. I'm also a big believer that we need to have a canary in that mine that is alerting us well early of a crisis, that we've got a problem, and then we cut off all water to the cruise ships. Ticks me off that we sell water as cheaply as we do to those cruise ships. We don't even recoup the cost of our water. This community is basically subsidizing that. Now, the cruise ships bring in money to the community, and I appreciate that. But lots of people bring money into the community that we're not subsidizing. They're used to paying what it costs for water down in Ketchikan or Juneau. We need to charge them what it's worth, and we need to make sure that our plants and our community are our top priority.
And so my question for that is, so you would be in favor of not selling water to the cruise ships if need be. You know, what about the other businesses like the seafood processors? Do you feel the same way towards them?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. And the seafood processors can't move on to Juneau and pick up water. You know, we just don't have the reservoirs and capacity to supply floating cities that drop by when we're in trouble. So we can turn, that's an easy turn off and say, I'm sorry, we're not going to be able to supply you with water for this prolonged period or whatever it might be. The processors are different. The processors are here and they're established within our community. And you know, let's face it, we're a fishing village. We used to be a timber village. We're not really a timber village anymore. We're a fishing village. And between the Marine Service Yard and what our fleet does for this community with the two plants, it brings in an enormous amount of revenue and provides an enormous amount of employment. So, number one for me is the community, and number two would be the plants, that we keep the plants supplied in water.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Perfect. And as far as, it sounds like you're in favor of conservation. Why not? We should be doing it. But also let's put money into a plant that can allow us some room to grow. That's very important to our community. And you've talked about metering. How do you feel about metering?
I'm 100% for metering. I know everybody that ever comes to my house from down south, it's like, what, they don't meter your water? I don't know. I mean, and when you, so you're a lot more cautious with a resource when you have to pay for it than if you don't. And typically people are not always motivated with, you know, I'm not going to use less water because that's just the right thing to do. When you can see and you're charged by the amount of gallons that you consume, I think it helps you conserve. It also allows, though, there's another factor that's important with metering. It allows them to determine where leaks are taking place. So if we have if we know all the water is static across the system and we're losing water somewhere, or we increase our water, we know we're losing water somewhere. But if the usage pops up, then we know that that's people turning their faucets on more or washing cars. So it allows us to do better leak detection as well. But no, I'm 100% for metering. Since the day I arrived here, people have been talking about metering. I remember Doug Roberts, when he was our mayor, talked about metering water. I think Bill Privet, when he was mayor, talked about metering. I know that Jeremy Maxan talked about metering. So it's not a new topic for this community. We just need to get it done and start moving forward.
Absolutely. Yeah, you think it's definitely a worthy investment.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that we would, kind of my battle cry has been, I would love to know what our actual need of water is as we moved forward in this process. Because, you know, I voted for the new plant, but, you know, I kind of always had this underpinning of that, do we really know how much water this community uses and how much water this community wastes and how much water we lose through leaks? Because just by plugging a few leaks, we dropped an enormous amount of water coming out of that plant.
Absolutely.
And if we've been losing water like that and wasting water, it's no wonder we're plugged up and in horrible shape. But I also realize it may have been the wrong plant from the start.
True. The wrong plant. Yeah. Okay. Then if you're just now tuning in, the time is 1:28. We have Assembly Member Steve Prasanka in the studio today. You can give us a call and ask him a question. That number is 874-2345. All right, we are back with our guest, Steve Prasanka. So, just one last question while we have you is... So, I mean, everything that we've been talking about so far has to deal with the money that the city has and how we should be using our money. And, you know, we have a new budget for the fiscal year. Is there anything we should know about in the budget? You know, what kind of cuts were made or anything that kind of jumps out to you that people should be aware of?
Well, I think... it was an interesting budget process because, Lisa, being a new city manager, really established a process for us. And it was a much more in-depth process than I've ever been involved in before. And there was a lot of opportunities for discussion with the assembly. I can't remember how many hours we put in. Somebody mentioned it in one of the meetings, but it was a lot of hours.
Mm-hmm.
And we went line by line through our budget. And really the assembly challenged Lisa to find as many efficiencies as possible and to basically start to look at departments that are potential revenue generators and to ask the question, how are we maximizing our ability to receive revenue out of those departments? And so it's not really the assembly's job to come up with the ideas on how to do that, but to basically challenge the administrator with working with her staff to figure out how to do that. So some of the things that came up were like the Nolan Museum and Civic Center. So there we were being asked to sign off on a new sort of structure for that facility. And our question to Lisa was, where's the business plan? Because this is a revenue generator, our potential revenue generator. Mm-hmm. Where is the business plan? What are we looking at? Where are we heading? So we want to understand how increasing the staff or changing that staff structure is going to generate more revenue. Because we can't continue to support things that are... between services and facilities, we can't support things that are not doing their best to pull their own weight. And so we asked for a business plan, and she came back and said, what I propose is that we take care of this position and this position, and then allow, so basically a facilities director and a museum civic center director, and then allow them to put together this business plan. And so we said, yeah, that makes sense. You got to have a leader in place to who's going to drive that process. And I think we just hired that person. And I think that it's going to be an excellent process for her to take the group through, with the goal of becoming more self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't have the funds to dump in. And one of our major problems in the community is deferred maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not just Wrangell. I was at a municipal league meeting, and I heard the mayor of Fairbanks talking, and if we think we have deferred maintenance, oh my goodness, they just have incredible deferred maintenance.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was incredible. I can't remember the millions that he was saying, but it is a lot of money. And we knew we did. So I'll pick one example, this public safety building.
Absolutely.
So it is really in tough shape. And it's because we have not had a maintenance plan that is going through and replacing things on a schedule and is evaluating issues they come and finding new solutions and not just patching up old issues and what was going on a regular ongoing basis. And the building is falling apart. It is a mess. And we have rot. We have mold in there. We had trees growing out of our roof. It was absolutely horrible. And that is because we had not put forward a maintenance plan on that building. And now we've got damage, and we continue to have it being damaged. So we have to start paying. We've been able to do go along, patch. And now we're at the point that if we don't start fixing these things, they're going to start falling down or being condemned.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to move forward. How we got to this point is a lesson that we have to learn to prevent. And I know Lisa's working hard on that. But we're going to tie into that building, and we've basically put the funds forward. We found some grants, and we're putting some matching monies, and we're doing what we can to make that happen up there to fix that problem. So the roof leaking, the walls, the rot, and all of it. And we've come up with, a pretty good plan there. And to prevent that from happening, we've now created a new maintenance department within the city that is just solely going to be dedicated to doing the maintenance of the buildings, and it's going to have a supervisor. They're actually going to be in a separate little area where the armory used to be, is where I think they're going to be housed out of, and there's going to be two maintenance people. So, and they're going to change how they also send out for the structure or for the schedule of maintenance. So we're this kind of thing costs money.
Yes.
We recognize that.
Uh-huh.
And we have authorized Lisa to move forward with taking care of that business. And we'll see how, in a year we can reevaluate and see how we're doing.
So we do have the money for that. We do have the, what does that money look like right now?
For the public safety building, I'm not sure exactly how it breaks down, but I know that they've been working to try and find additional funds. And we've put money in just directly right out of the budget. I can't remember what, I know we did do a deficit budget this year. Most of that deficit is for that building, because
okay.
we've got to deal with it. We just can't leave it any longer. But once we're done dealing with that, we got to look at the schools. And once we're done with schools, we got to go back to the Nolan Center and look at the moss on the roof and look at this and look at that and figure all the stuff out and keep going at it. The pool, the old gym. I mean, there's all of our buildings need attention.
They do. And you're saying we're going to remedy that by having these maintenance plans, by looking to see where we can get more revenue into the city, just like the Nolan Center. That should be bringing in money. That's a great facility to get money coming in.
Well, we have some limiting factors here that make it difficult for whoever's in that job. So we don't really have the capacity to have a 500 person conference here, because we don't have 500 beds for people to sleep in.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to find the sweet spot for those sort of events.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe we can attract more small-based conferences to come in. I remember years ago, I was talking to a guy in the Stikine Inn, and he was a cardiologist. They had, like, 12 cardiologists picked Wrangell to come up and do their little conference. They hired a guy to come in and present to them, and then they all went fishing and went on this up the Stikine, and that's how they do it. And so
yeah.
They did their day of conference work, and they went and played for a couple of days.
Nice.
So maybe that's something we can look at for niche markets. I don't know, but
yeah,
I'm sure Cindy will be looking at all of that. But we have to make a commitment to building the structure to keep the maintenance going, and that's what we've done. We've with the money that we've set aside for the new department and a second person. And Lisa's been very creative how she's packaged all that together. And we're trying not to grow our staff because we know that staff growth is very, very expensive.
Yes.
But we have to have enough people here to do the job.
Absolutely. Definitely. All right. And any other last words, or you think we nailed everything?
I think
for right now,
man, you nailed it. I can't think of anything else.
Okay, then. And so the next assembly meeting is going to be a week from today.
Right, we have a special assembly meeting tomorrow night.
Oh boy. Okay, let's talk about that. You're right.
We've got that going on tomorrow night where we're trying to pick up a bunch of things that we needed to take care of. So. Folks are always welcome to come down or listen on KSTK.
For a special meeting.
You guys don't do special meetings?
Probably not.
Oh, man.
No.
Okay. Well, don't listen to KSTK then.
Don't listen to KSTK.
Come on down and listen in person.
Yeah, it means come on down or wait for me to write something up. If
absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a special meeting tomorrow. Is that 6?
I think it's 7. Let me look at my calendar.
Yeah, go ahead and remind us of when that is. 6:30. Okay. What are the agenda items for that?
I will bring that up for you. You have to sing, though, while I'm bringing it up.
Our country.
Oh, wait, maybe don't sing for us. I was lying. I'm glad you do the news and not the entertainment. That's really funny. Well. Okay. Agenda packet. Yeah, it's a little bit discombobulated this next little while. We've sort of got meetings scheduled and rescheduled, and we're trying to be really available to the staff because they've got so many things going on with this negotiation with CERT. So I know we've got a lot of sort of out of sequence meetings coming up, but it looks like there's a approval for a 60-foot floating easement through the Institute property.
Mm-hmm.
And that was tabled, I think if you remember from last meeting, because we wanted Carol to be there to explain some things.
Nice.
And then another resolution of the city to provide the creation of the Capitol's facilities director's job description. We were just talking about that with a wage and grade table.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What we were just talking about.
Okay.
Proposed resolution, the Assembly of City, Borough of Wrangell, providing for the amendment of the Public Works Director's job description.
Okay.
And that's a chunk of that is because we've, it was a combined position before. So the position used to have one person who was on capital projects and one person who was on public works. We combined the two and now we're splitting those back out.
Nice.
Approval to hold, what did I just lose here? Stand by. Oh, man. I just lost my whole thing here. And then just to have, we're going to be talking about rescheduling the regular assembly meeting from the 24th of July to the 7th of August.
Oh, okay. Good to know.
And then approval to hold a special assembly meeting on August 2nd. And I believe that meeting is to discuss some of the search stuff.
Okay.
And then we need to talk about our, we're going to be talking about the legal costs for us to move forward with this acquisition and merger. Extremely expensive. It's going to be close to $300,000 for our legal costs.
Yeah, so, I bet. I'm not surprised.
It's not cheap at all. And we need to take a look. But I would remind the community that if we keep going this course at $60,000 or $70,000 a month that we're losing. So it's, you know, at least we know that this is X amount out for this period and then we stop losing the money. So,
yeah, exactly.
But we'll be discussing that as well. So those are the things on the agenda.
Okay. Thank you for giving us the update on that. Yeah. So if you want to come down tomorrow, 6:30, they'll be having a meeting. Otherwise, you're going to have to wait till
24th, I think I said.
Or you said it was rescheduled.
Oh, rescheduled,
from
right.
The 24th
to the
7th. To the
7th.
Okay.
Now you got me looking
to
again.
The 7th.
Stand by.
The 7th.
We got it all messed up here. 24th to the 7th, yeah.
Absolutely. Okay.
Thanks, June.
All right, Steve. Thank you so much. You've been listening to Talk on the Rock, your local live call-in show. The time is 1:44. We will resume our regular programming, and you can always, we'll be back next week at 1 p.m. again. Peace out.